never wanted to be in a fancy metropolitan broadcast facility where the most thought-provoking thing within view is an occasional four-car pileup on the freeway below. We like being miles from nowhere, in the middle of a vineyard that cannot be seen from the little two-lane road on the other side of that rise. Our barn has awesome acoustics and was built with hand tools over 100 years ago. Nonetheless, we've got some really state-of-the-art broadcast technology inside. And our wine cellar, once a root cellar that is absolutely packed with wine we've collected or been given by friends. Welcome. You have just set foot on Grape Encounters radio property, where we don't believe in no trespassing signs. But let's make this our little secret. Oh, and that wine is protected by the sweetest-looking golden retriever who dated a Doberman for a while, so don't get any ideas.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
And it is time for your weekly Grape Encounter. And gosh almighty, my favorite event is coming up. And I talked about it a lot last year. It just totally blew me away. And this year we're involved in a very big way. It is Wine Song, coming up Friday, September 8th, and runs actually through Sunday when they have a VIP Sparkling Sunday brunch. And I am going to be there for all events. Can't wait. And it doesn't matter where in these United States you're listening to this radio broadcast, it is worth getting a ticket, airplane ticket, to get yourself to the Mendocino Coast, though you can't land in Mendocino, by the way, but you can get close and then go to this event. It's going to be one of the absolute best wine events you've ever been to. In my book, it's my favorite. I just like it. I love it. It's wonderful. There's somebody that's been there since day one. I'm a newbie to Wine Song, but I have somebody that has been there since day one, and they were the first winery in the Anderson Valley, which is this absolutely gorgeous valley that runs kind of perpendicular to the Mendocino Coast, and it's now one of the most notable wine regions, especially for Pinots in the country. Well, let's call it the world. It's Zach Robinson from Hush, and Zach, welcome.
Hey, David, nice to be on the show, and I hope we get to talk about Wine Song a little bit. It's my favorite, too.
Yeah, I don't think you were there from day one because you were still in diapers, right?
No, I'll take it if you give it. No, the family has certainly been there since day one. We're a small community in Mendocino County, and so when, you know, a group gets together to support the hospital like they did with Wine Song in the mid-80s, I know that my parents and my uncles were first in line to ask how they could help support it. And what's amazing is it's just grown to be one of these premier wine festivals, certainly in the state, and maybe I'm even comfortable saying bigger than that.
Oh, yeah. When you say in the state, you're talking about the state of California, which is, you know, it's certainly biggest wine state in the country, but is one of the biggest wine regions in the world. So that's saying a lot.
Yeah, we didn't start out that way, but things have been going well for California.
You know, I really love events that support a cause, and it's nice to know that you're doing some good when you buy a ticket and you eat like a glutton and drink like a fool and have such a great time. But I think, you know, we create these events around a cause, but then they evolve into something that's even larger than the cause, which is, you know, a marvelous time where people get together to do good, but to enjoy things in a concentration of delicious, amazing things all in one place. And it's just crazy good.
And we could even emphasize the fact that it's set in these botanical gardens along the Mendocino Coast. So as you are eating and drinking, just like you described, you're enjoying the flowers, you're hanging out under exotic trees, you're mingling with winemakers and owners of wineries as you enjoy the fragrances coming off the various flower gardens they have.
And at some point, you've had enough wine where you kind of unbutton a couple of buttons of your shirt, and you just run around chasing the little squirrels. It's a great...
There are a few rules, I think.
Well, I did it last year, and nobody stopped me. No, it's a really great time, and one of the reasons that I like to talk about some of these specific events, even though I know that there are listeners that will never get to these events, is that, you know, wine is interesting in that it's a catalyst for really good and wonderful things. And I'm loving the fact that across this country, I don't care what the state is, there are these kinds of events that are evolving. Some of them are very evolved and some of them are in their infancy. But, you know, wine is almost always the catalyst for good things.
And let's add to that. Let's say good wine is the catalyst to good things.
No, good wine is the catalyst for great things. Let's do that.
Sure.
So speaking of good wines, Hush. No, I don't mean to shut you up, but Hush was the first winery there in the Anderson Valley. How did that come about? Because that's a gamble, right?
It was a huge gamble. And the Anderson Valley had this long history in the 50s and 60s of vineyards trying to get started and failing because it was the wrong varietals and it was the wrong side of the hill. And a lot of things just weren't perfect to make it work. And so it was finally in the 60s that a few folks chose again with what grapes to plant and prove that Chardonnay and Gewürztraminer could work. And then in the 70s at Hush, we figured out that Pinot Noir can get right.
So you were responsible for that?
Yeah, Hush introduced Pinot Noir to the region.
Isn't that something? And what's interesting, I guess, in those days, I have to ask this question, did we call it Pinot or did we call it Burgundy?
It was this great time of transition. Yeah, we did call it Pinot, but we were also at the same time working on the white side where we still called our Chardonnay either White Burgundy or the official name of the varietal, Pinot Chardonnay.
Pinot Chardonnay.
Then we eventually dropped the Pinot from it and just called it Chardonnay. The 60s and 70s, things were moving around. You buy under a name and who knows what we would call it today.
Yeah, but you know, Gallo, you know, and I have only the greatest respect for Gallo. People will say to me, Gallo, you know, isn't that the cheap wine? And people don't realize that Gallo owns a lot of really, really super high class wineries. And then on top of that, you know, they pioneered so much that has contributed to the wine industry. So I have great respect for them. But they built an empire around Gallo Hardy Burgundy,
right,
which was, you know, essentially Pinot, was it not?
That's hard to say exactly. It was meant as a brand, not as a description of where it was from, certainly, and not really as a description of what varietals went in it.
Why did we call it Pinot and not Burgundy?
Well, Pinot is, of course, the name of the varietal. So Pinot Noir, it is its own genetically identifiable class of grape, the same way Chardonnay is and Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet Sauvignon is. The French model was you identify a grape by its region, the place where it's grown. But what was different about California, and even though we emulated that French model for a little while, it was Robert Mondavi and some of his colleagues who said, no, wait, we're going to start calling the wines we make by the name of the grapes that we use. And those names were always known. They were just never put on the bottle.
Yeah, but nobody in those days could say Pinot Noir. I can barely say it now.
Not as bad as Gewürztraminer, which is another varietal we grow.
For some reason, that's easier for me. And if I've had three glasses of wine, I cannot say Pinot Noir. I can't.
We'll put that to the test when you come out.
Yes. In fact, we can have a contest. We can have a pool. How many glasses of Pinot does it take David Wilson before he can't say Pinot Noir anymore?
Okay. How many great glasses of Pinot?
Hey, somebody call an Uber. Oh, my gosh. You know, you said something about Pinot Chardonnay. This is one of those facts that I'm trying to get out there more on Grape Encounters Radio is the relationship between Pinot and Chardonnay. You know, one of the things that I found really interesting, I was up in Oregon a couple of months ago, and the Oregon winemakers are now, you know, very enthralled with the idea of planting more Chardonnay. And of course, the rest of the world knows that, you know, where there's Pinot, there's Chardonnay. And,
right.
You know, I don't want to insult anybody in Oregon, but it's an epiphany they just seem to be having right now. But the relationship between Pinot and Chardonnay is a lot deeper than anybody knows because nobody ever talks about it. You want to talk about it?
Well, I know for certainly speaking from our experience at our property, the grapes have so much in common. And then when I hear the geneticists start talking, you know, they confirm it. It's not only a common heritage, but they share largely the same genome.
So somebody, you know, at least the way I hear the story is that Pinot Noir is the love child of a Chardonnay and some kind of peasant grape from Croatia.
I don't know that. Is that a People magazine story on who's love child?
No, I got this from National Enquirer, you know. Fake news.
Fake news. Yeah, I can't tell you exactly how or even which one came first, but they've both been around for a while. And as we know, Chardonnay's taken over the world of white wine. It is by far the dominant white wine in the U.S. And one of the reasons is it grows so well in so many different climates.
Yeah.
In our Anderson Valley, which is quite cold, frigid on some summer days, it grows great. But at the same time, you can go over to California's Central Valley, a very hot, if not certainly warm climate, and Chardonnay still grows grape. It's flexible that way, which makes it such a great grape to work with.
Well, it really has a power thing. You know, Chardonnay wants to be powerful, and so it'll grow any place, like a weed, like devil's grass. Anyway, well, Zach, we're going to take a quick break here and come back and visit a little longer with Zach Robinson. Zach, I have a feeling we could probably do 10 shows in a row. Have a good time. You don't seem
like fun.
You sound like a guy who has a lot of fun, and I cannot wait to catch up with you at Wine Song. We're going to do some damage, Zach.
Hey, all right.
Okay, sounds good. Hey, we'll be back with more Grape Encounters right after this, and my special guest, Zach Robinson from Hush Vineyards. But he is not going to stay hush for long. We'll talk more in just a second.
Remember, as much as you may love wine, it is not the answer to your problems. Unless the problem is you're out of wine. Your Grape Encounter with David Wilson will continue right after these important messages. You don't have a problem with that, do you? Did you know that you can visit us in person right in the heart of the Central Coast wine country of California? We can get you a special rate at one of our loveliest hotels, introduce you to some epic wines in person, help you chart out amazing self-guided winery tours, and tell you stories that we're not allowed to share on the radio. Okay, that last one was a stretch. Here's David.
All right, back with Grape Encounters Radio, and I think I know who I'm going to be spending some party time with at Wine Song. It's going to be Zach Robinson from Hush Vineyards. Welcome back, Zach.
Hi.
So, very first winery in the Anderson Valley, long described as sort of the secret amazing wine region in California. Is the Anderson Valley a secret anymore?
Is it a secret? No, not much of a secret now. We had our coming of age when the Wine Spectator put right on the cover Anderson Valley, one of the world's best growing regions for Pinot Noir. And that made a lot of people open their eyes and say, Anderson Valley? Where? Who? What are we talking about here?
I'm going to put you on the spot now. You ready?
Go.
This is not going to be easy. You're going to have to play favorites here. Apart from the Anderson Valley, let's put Anderson Valley aside.
Mm-hmm.
Your three favorite Pinot wine regions.
Oh, that's actually not even that hard.
Okay, go ahead.
So that would be certainly you got to do Oregon.
Willamette, obviously.
Yep, so let's just choose Willamette out of the Oregon group there. Whenever you can get your hands on a fun Burgundy from France, you always got to go for it. And with every bottle, you learn something. That's what makes that region so much fun.
Okay.
And then this is the boring choice here. It's less controversial, but anything from the Central Coast producers in California is also a lot of fun these days.
Wow.
You know, Anderson Valley isn't really the new guy anymore, and that's fine with us. We're comfortable with where we get ranked and where we get positioned. But I enjoy seeing what some of this young, fresh blood is doing in the Central Coast.
But the Central Coast is a really huge area.
So I must be talking to a guy based on the Central Coast.
That's a distinct possibility. So let me throw this one at you, okay? We've got the Santa Lucia Highlands in Monterey. We've got the Santa Rita Hills down in the Santa Ynez Valley, basically. We've got some stuff down near Santa Barbara. What do you like?
I'm going to narrow it in and really choose favorites.
I'm sorry, and I left one out. Santa Maria.
Absolutely.
Okay, pick one.
What I like to go for is for the coolest climates where people are successfully growing Pinot Noir and see what they're doing, especially if they're doing something different from what we are.
Okay, so what does that mean?
I'm going to leave it vague at that level.
See, as much as I do love the wines here from the immediate area surrounding the super secret wine cellar hideaway of Grape Encounters Radio, I do really love those Santa Lucia Highland Pinots.
Okay.
I really
have a little bit of extra heat.
Yeah, I love those. Okay, and you completely overlooked, and I guess it's because it just doesn't need any more acclaim. You just left out the Russian River altogether.
Who? I didn't hear who that region was.
I said I was Russian to the river.
Russian River, those are our nice neighbors to the south here.
They do a good job up there.
They do a great job. And maybe we feel a little bit competitive with what we do there sometimes. But they're the popular kid. They're the sexy one right now. So I don't need to give them a plug.
Oh, my gosh. That's hysterical. Okay. So I'm going to make a confession. You may not know this about me, but I sometimes, actually more often than not, diss Pino. I want to explain why before you get mad, okay?
Nice chatting with you, David.
Don't hang up. No, stop it. Stop it. Let me tell you why. Because I really feel very strongly that after the movie Sideways, a lot of people who, you know, were growing Merlot and other stuff said, oh, let's just jerk out the Merlot and let's put in some Pinot in land that cannot grow Pinot. And they made a whole bunch of just terrible Pinot out there and flooded the market with it. And it just makes me so angry. I just lose it when I taste terrible Pinot. Don't you agree there's a lot of terrible Pinot out there? Just say it.
Well, let's do this instead. The wine world is plagued by fads. And certainly Pinot Noir was out of vogue in the 70s. Most vineyards were ripping out their Pinot Noir, which had been long planted in various regions.
Okay.
And in the 80s, we really had to climb tooth and nail to get each and every new consumer to try our Pinot Noir and hopefully fall in love. So we were already booming before that movie happened.
Yeah,
and
since jumped
on the bandwagon.
Yeah. I do think this, that people give the movie a lot of credit for popularizing Pinot. But what I do think the movie did more than that was it caused a movement toward better Merlot.
Yeah, the Merlot folks had to work harder to get attention. And we can add Syrah to that category, too. They fell off the radar.
Yeah.
And are trying to claw their way back in. Because Pinot was sucking all the atmosphere for the new red grape. Of course, Cabernet has always been king and probably always will be for the foreseeable future. But Pinot, when it grabbed that second place slot, didn't leave room for anyone behind.
But see, the interesting thing is this, that Pinot, if you threw a bunch of glasses in front of me or, you know, anybody that has even a mild amount of wine knowledge, we could pick out the Pinots. Pinot is distinct, and it's really hard to mistake Pinot for something else. You can mistake Cabernet for Merlot. You can mistake Merlot for even Zinfandel sometimes. The other red wines are a little fuzzier than Pinot. Pinot is Pinot, and it's got a certain smell to it and a certain taste to it that's distinctive, you know, even if it's the forest floor Pinots or a much cleaner Pinot, an oaked Pinot, whatever, you know, Pinot is distinctive. So why would Pinot take away so much from these other red varietals that are nothing like it?
With your question there, I'm thinking of the recent eclipse. My family and I, we drove up to Oregon to watch it in its totality.
No, you went all the way to Oregon to watch it?
Yeah, we did. But here's why. Because it was magical, and we knew it would be that way. And to me, that has a parallel with Pinot Noir. You can watch the movie and the dialogues and Sideways and hear someone wax on poetically about Pinot Noir. But it offers something special, something magical that you don't necessarily find in some of the other red varietals.
Okay.
I'm sold.
12 hours? Come on. Really?
It's easily worth it. I'd get in the car and drive up there again tomorrow.
You would? Okay. I can't wait to spend some time with you in person. You're my kind of guy.
All right.
Obsessive compulsive for sure, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Best kind of farmers are that way.
All right. Hey, Zach Robinson, the brand is Hush. Hey, you want to give a little plug for the winery? Where can people find your stuff?
On the way to the Mendocino Coast, you're probably going to pass through the Anderson Valley, one of the smallest wine-growing regions in California. But we offer some of the best wines, a mix of Pinot Noir. Our neighbors across the street make sparkling wine, wonderful Gewürztraminer, Alsatian style. And just, it's a wonderful day. It's what wine tasting used to be before it got popularized and commercialized.
What a plug. You should be the poster child for the Anderson Valley. Your website?
HushVineyards.com.
And that is spelled H-U-S-C-H, right?
Perfect, yeah. Throw a little German tongue in there and you got the spelling correct.
Okay, perfect. Hey, Zach, what a pleasure to talk to you. So much fun. I will see you at Winesong. And folks, if you want to get tickets to Winesong, in fact, I'm not going to even make it complicated for you. It's Winesong. You can just Google Winesong. You'll find the event, okay? You don't have to remember anything else. Just Winesong. And Google it and go there and hunt me down and hunt Zach down. And we're going to have a grand old time. Ain't that right, Zach?
We're going to have some great wines at the Hush Vineyards table. And if you want to stop by and taste wine made from the first Pinot Noir grapes grown in Anderson Valley, come on by.
I will be first in line. All right. Hey, we've got Christy Charles coming up next from Foresight. You know Christy, right?
Chrissy's my buddy.
She's your bud? Okay, well, your bud's coming on next as we talk about the wines of the Anderson Valley and wine song and all things wine and just having a really good time, because the people of the Anderson Valley, they know how to party, they know how to have a good time, and that's what they have most in common with Grape Encounters. Be back with Chrissy right after this.
We like to talk about wine.
This segment of Grape Encounters is brought to you by my number one wine discovery of 2016, the awesome gold medal winning wines of the Cardello Winery. From the very first sip, you'll understand why these astounding, nicely priced Cardello wines are swiftly becoming a cult classic, just as I predicted. Handcrafted and stunning, you can get yours at CardelloWinery.com. That's CardelloWinery.com. Or find more information at GrapeEncounters.com.
Conservative about what he spends on wine, but liberal on how much he pours his friends. Here's your host, David Wilson.
We're back with Grape Encounters Radio, and now it is such a pleasure to take you to a winery that really stands out for a lot of different reasons. Definitely one of my favorite places, my favorite wine countries in not only this country, but anywhere in the world for that matter, is the absolutely gorgeous, quaint, rustic Anderson Valley. And I now have Chrissy Charles on from Foresight Wines. And Chrissy, welcome to Grape Encounters, our first time to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure. And, you know, there were a number of things as I read up about Foresight that really stood out. And I want to hit all of those things, hopefully, in the time that we have to talk. But one of them is a question that comes up all the time, and it has to do with vegan wines. Because there are very, very few people, as you know, out there that are producing wines that are suitable for vegans. And I just wanted to start there because it's such an interesting topic. And as I understand it, you were one of the first, right, to actually offer those kinds of wines.
We were, yes. We're the first winery in the country to put it on our labels. So everything that we produce says that we're suitable for vegans and vegetarians. And, you know, first and foremost, of course, we want to make excellent wines. That's what we aim for. But we also believe in more of a traditional winemaking style, more kind of on the natural winemaking side. So we don't use any animal-derived products in any winemaking.
Isn't it amazing how things have changed in recent years? I mean, the drastic reduction in the use of pesticides, you know, the more organic consciousness that has, you know, really been developing in the wine industry. What's really amazing to me about it is there was a time when I found that wines that called themselves vegan or vegetarian, especially, or organic, weren't necessarily all that wonderful. But the wine industry seems to have embraced this in such a way that now those wines are the best wines out there. And I think we've really learned a lot, really, in the last, what, 20 years?
Yeah, probably about 20 years. You know, and small family wineries, I think, are a lot of this change. I mean, when you are small and you can pay attention to everything from the vineyard all the way through the winemaking, you know, you just inherently do business a little differently, and you're closer to the land. You know, we live on the vineyard. So, you know, we're more interested in living somewhere that, you know, we know we are safe, and we have a 2.5-year-old son. And so, yeah, you know, we tend to not do as much, not add as much, you know, think about being close to the land and respecting it.
So why do you think that is? Is it just because you live there and you're in touch with it 24/7? Or, you know, what makes the small winery operator more conscientious about these things than the larger operations?
It's a very good question.
Well, that's why I asked
you know, in my opinion, I think it's we're not as much to the mercy of the market. You know, our wines at Foresight, you can't find on a grocery store shelf. We don't have to ship them everywhere. So, you know, we can inherently just do things a little differently. You know, we don't filter any of our Pinots. We use all wild yeast here, so we're not adding a lot of things to the wines and, you know, or taking them away at the end.
Let me stop you right there for a second about on the topic of wild yeast.
Mm-hmm.
So explain to listeners what the difference is between what some other winemaker might do versus wild yeast, because I think that's probably an unknown for most consumers.
Yes, we tend to get a little geeky on the side.
That's okay.
So wild yeast is just yeast that's natural to your environment. Every cluster of grapes actually has everything it needs on it to make itself into wine. It has yeast, it has bacteria, all these things that are present in nature, in the air, everywhere. So when we bring in the grapes, we don't add any yeast that you would maybe get from, you know, a winery supply store, essentially. We just bring them in, you know, we stem them or, you know, the process is happening, and we let Mother Nature do her work.
So why don't more people do that? That's something I just don't get, because we always talk about terroir, meaning, you know, the influence of the environment, every environmental factor on the wine, and that has become so important to winemakers. So why not just let the natural yeast do its job?
Well, not everyone can. You know, sometimes you'll have bad yeasts or bad bacteria present that maybe will prohibit you from doing that. But, you know, it also, it takes a lot longer. For us, our fermentations go like 3 weeks versus if we had actually added packaged yeast, you know, which are kind of super strains. We've bred them over the years to be very vigorous and very alcohol tolerant. You know, 5 to 7 days your fermentations are done. So we have to be a lot more patient. We're doing all hand punch downs. You know, we're touching, tasting, seeing. It's a more labor-intensive process. And it takes more time.
Yeah, no, I get it. But, you know, wine is a patience business anyway. In the grand scheme of things, what's a couple of weeks anyway?
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, if you have a new block coming in of another variety, you're in a rush to get into tank. Sometimes what's already in tank needs to leave quickly.
Hey, listen, you're a graduate of Cal Poly down where I'm at.
I am, yeah.
You know, we're almost cousins.
Almost. You never know.
Yeah. So what was it like getting your education on the Central Coast of California? You know, it's a very different world down here, but, you know, also very laid back down home.
It is. It felt like home to me. I mean, I grew up here in Anderson Valley in Mendocino County on our property where the winery now sits. We're actually raising my son in my old childhood bedroom, and we live in my old childhood home. So I grew up in a very rural area and, you know, very beautiful. We had lots of animals. We had the whole farm. And San Luis Obispo and the whole surrounding area really felt like home. I mean, a few less trees, but, you know, beautiful beaches and friendly people. Yeah, I loved it. It was a great time.
If I had to live anywhere but the Central Coast of California, I would live in the Anderson Valley, one of the absolute most beautiful places on earth. Now, I don't want to forget to talk about the fact that you're going to be at my number one, numero uno, absolutely top of the heap events coming up just a weeks away. It is Wine Song, which starts Friday, September 8th and goes on through Sunday, September 10th. And what an event that is. A spectacular event. I have been to so many wine events, as I'm sure you have been. I don't know of another event, honestly, that I could say tops Wine Song. It's just this magical event that takes place in the Mendocino Botanical Gardens. Beautiful, and the quality of wines there. And especially if you're a Pinot lover, you definitely want to come down, because the largest number of wineries come from the Anderson Valley. You know, people used to call the Anderson Valley the secret region in California winemaking, and it's not really a secret so much anymore. You make some of the best Pinots, for sure, in the world.
Yeah, it's a special place for Pinot Noir. That's really, it's the most widely planted grape here. It's what we do. We're too cold to ripen really any other red grape. So that's the perfect place for Pinot. And yeah, Wine Song is an amazing event that takes place right in our backyard. We're lucky enough to have this spectacular Mendocino coast, you know, a half an hour from most of the wineries here or less.
Yeah. It's amazing, because as you go through the Anderson Valley, and I'm not sure how long the Anderson Valley is, but it's a pretty large valley, and it runs perpendicular to the coast, right?
Yeah, it cuts kind of northwest through the coastal mountains, and it's about 15 miles long, and we have about 30 tasting rooms now. You can spend a weekend dedicated to tasting Pinot, white wines, and sparkling wines here.
And would you say it's fair to say that the Anderson Valley is California of the 60s and 70s?
That's fairly fair.
Fairly,
you know, we have a few nice restaurants and things that have come along, little shops since, you know, the last probably 10 years. But, yeah, it feels very comfortable and very like you're taking a little step back in time here.
I just mean that it's very friendly. It's very down home. It's not the least bit commercialized, not even a little bit. And, you know, it's rustic, it's beautiful. And then you go through this 15-mile valley, and then you bust out into the Mendocino Coast, and it's one of the most beautiful places in America. Just absolutely no doubt about it. And that's why I just really encourage people. Wine Song really is an international event at this point in time. People come from places outside of the U.S., and it is worth the journey no matter where you are. Certainly in this country, it is worth taking the time to fly out there, stay out there, and enjoy this magnificent event in one of the most magnificent places in California. You just got to Google it, right? And, you know, check it out online, because it's going to shock you how beautiful both the Mendocino Coast and the Anderson Valley is.
Yes, it is. It's really an escape, no matter where you're coming from in California. It does. We do feel like a little bit of a world apart here, and it's not that far, but just far enough that, you know, you feel like you're removed from your daily life.
Yeah, oh, absolutely the case. Well, anyway, we are talking to Christy Charles from Foresight Wines, and glad to have you on. Can you hang with me, Christy, for a second? We'll take a little break here, and then I have a couple of just got to ask questions for you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll be back with more Grape Encounters right after this. We're talking to Christy Charles of Foresight Wines, and we'll be back in just, it's going to be like 2 minutes.
They say wine is a truth serum, which is why you'll never hear any fake news on Grape Encounters Radio. Here's David.
All right, back with Grape Encounters Radio. Really pleased to have on Christy Charles from Foresight Wines in the beautiful, amazing, extraordinary Anderson Valley. It's one of the most beautiful places, really, in America. And it was really the secret wine region for a long time. I still see people call it that, but I don't know if that's true anymore, because people have discovered that the Anderson Valley makes some of the finest Pinots in the world. And you folks know I am so particular about Pinot. Hey, Christy, I even call myself a Pinot hater. You want to know why?
Why?
Because there's so much bad Pinot out there. we were talking during the break. I don't like to disparage people, but I do think that there's a lot of people who are making Pinot that shouldn't be making Pinot. They just shouldn't be.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with you. Pinots, it's hard to grow. It's hard to make. Notoriously fickle, low yielding. I mean, you have to be in the right spot, and you have to be patient with it.
It is not a wine for beginning winemakers, that's for sure.
No.
Now, something interesting about your Pinots is you have a number of unoaked Pinots, right?
We do one Pinot Noir in all older French oak, no new oak at all, which is uncommon anymore.
Okay, and so tell us the difference between the experience you're going to have with an unoaked Pinot versus an oaked Pinot.
Yeah, so we are a state, so all of our Pinot Noirs are coming from one property, the Charles Vineyard, which is my last name, of course, our family vineyard.
Right.
And so it's really a fun tasting experience in the tasting room, because we do, on a few occasions, we've done an unoaked completely Pinot, which is done all in tank, so, you know, no barrel contact at all. And then we every year do what we call the zero new oak, which is all older barrels, so no new oak. And then we have varying degrees of new oak, ranging 30% to, you know, 50 and 60%. So you can go through our tasting and really see, you know, same fruit source, same year, just what the barrel does, pick date, you know, these factors. It's kind of a learning experience on what does oak do.
So what is the profile difference between the oaked Pinot and Pinots that you make that have either neutral oak or are fermented in stainless?
So the stainless or older oak, it's more about the fruit. You know, you have nothing kind of interfering with just the pure fruit that you're getting right from the vineyard. We usually do a little earlier pick date on them too, so really light and bright and pretty. You can chill them on a hot day. Not a lot of tannin, that structure that kind of, you know, maybe takes the saliva out of your mouth. You know, we don't really have that in Pinot, but they're just a little softer. They're fun. They're different. And then, you know, as you get more new oak, you get both the flavor, that toastiness, and also you get a little bit of structure from that. So it does definitely change the way that the Pinots come across when you're tasting them.
So are you going to be at the Pinot event? It's called a Pinot Noir Celebration at the Little River Inn. That's on Friday the 8th.
Of course, yeah.
That's a big deal event. That's such a
beautiful
place.
It's all Pinot.
Place.
I mean, how can you go wrong?
Yeah, well, unless you don't like Pinot. But let's move on to something that I'd like to talk a lot on the show about, varietals that people don't normally go out and purchase. And you have one, and I'm really thinking we have never talked about on Grape Encounters. I have no idea why. Semillon.
Yes, we do have a Semillon. We do it every year. We love it. It's definitely different. You know, traditionally it's blended with Sauvignon Blanc, which is what we planted it for. But we discovered the first few vintages. We just really liked it on its own. And it's different. It has, you know, the Sauvignon Blanc can be very racy and, you know, bright. Semillons, it's a little rounder and softer. We often put like one new barrel in the mix, just that little whisper of new oak. So, you know, it drinks more like a very restrained Chardonnay in that degree. But it's fun. People often remark that they have no idea what it is and they're excited to try it.
It is really, really a delicious varietal. I can't imagine that more than maybe 0.5% of the grapes planted in California are Semillon. It's really hard to find. But I would say this, that if somebody's growing it, they probably know what they're doing because it's an oddball grape. But gosh, it is so delicious. And like, you know, it's a great alternative to Chardonnay.
It is, yeah. It kind of fills that, you know, void in our lineup between Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir. So we love it for that. A little seafood, you know, we're on the coast here. So, you know, butter, little lemon, Semillon, like, you're done.
Come on, great. I haven't eaten yet today. All right, we're running low on time, but there's something I really wanted to talk to you about, which is a favorite topic of mine because it's you do something that I advocate for very strongly, which is label disclosure. And I really appreciate people who really spell out what's in that bottle of wine because I just think that so many wine consumers are fooled by the fact that when they read that it's a Pinot Noir or a Cabernet, there can be so many other things in that bottle that they don't realize. Can you speak to this for a moment?
Absolutely. I think people would make different purchasing decisions if wine had to label ingredients.
Wow, that is, wait, stop. That is the best way to put it ever.
Well, it's true.
Exactly.
You know, we're in California. We read ingredients. People do. You know, people here are very into what goes into their food. And to not be offered that opportunity in wine is, for us, unacceptable. So we label everything with our ingredients and that it's suitable for vegans and vegetarians. We do things very naturally. So there's not much in that list. You know, the main ingredient is grapes.
What about sulfites?
We do use a little bit of sulfur, yeah. You know, in a good Pinot Noir, 30 parts per million, a minute amount gives you, you know, for our wines, it can give you a decade in bottle of, you know, time in the cellar.
So do you think that when it comes to labeling disclosure that more and more wineries are going to jump on board that bandwagon? Because, I mean, I've talked to a number of winemakers who are beginning to do that, and I do see a lot more disclosure on wine bottles than we used to. It seems that that's a real selling point for the person who's making a really clean, simple wine. I would think you'd want to brag about that.
Absolutely. You know, it's not the easiest thing to do, to do nothing. Really, you know, or do very little. We have a wealth of products and, you know, processes that we can use at wineries and never have to disclose. So it does take a certain amount of bravery to put it all out there. And I hope more wineries do.
I think you just gave us another really quotable quote that it takes a lot of work to do nothing.
Yes.
I think that's what you said. Anyway, really brilliant. Hey, Christy, so glad to have you on. What a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you at Wine Song.
Yeah, and, absolutely. We'll see you in just a few short weeks.
Yeah, just a couple of weeks. And so for people who want to know more about your wines, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
You can go to foursightwines.com, which is F-O-U-R, and check out our website. Give us a call. We're here answering the phone. We're a family business.
And for listeners, if you really want to get a kick, go online, go to their news section on the Foresight website and read the reviews of these wines, you'll be stunned. You're going to see two things stand out. First of all, hear people raving about why it is that you have to visit Foresight when you go to the Anderson Valley and even stay there. They have two beautiful guest houses there. Then secondly, just the quality of the wines. Just amazing, wonderful wines that get very high ratings, lots of gold medals, and well-deserved, I would say.
Thank you, David.
All right. Hey, Christy Charles, great to have you on. And that is going to do it for Grape Encounters this week. We will be back next week. Boy, do we have a special show for you next week. We're going to have on Mr. Cabernet, if not the most distinguished Cabernet maker in America, certainly close. When we return next week with Grape Encounters Radio.
Your Grape Encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.
Do, 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 do. Wine.